Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to Three Hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold our calls for the time being, because we have this on the line from back in Maryland, from the Institute of the Constitution, Pastor David Whitney. David, thank you so very much for being with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Dr. Stan. Thank you for having me on your show, and I really appreciate your listeners, because they care about this country, which has lost its direction and lost its mooring, and that's what we do at Institute on the Constitution, reconnect people with the history and heritage of our land, with the vision that our founding fathers had based upon God's law and biblical commands regarding law and government and economics that made this such a great nation for so long that we've lost our way because that foundation has been rejected by the leaders, but also not understood by most of the citizens in this land. So returning to that constitutional government that was established by our framers is what we intend to do.
All right, fine. Well, I think it's so marvelous that you actually, dedicated yourself, and the Institute of the Constitution is dedicated to educating the American people about this wonderful form of government we have. And had we been following that today, we would not be in a war in the Middle East. We would not have the massive debt we have as a nation. We would be a free people, and we'd be a lot healthier people. And almost everything the government does makes matters worse as far as our citizens, which is why Thomas Jefferson said so well, speak not to be of confidence in men, but rather bind them down from mischief with the chains of the Constitution. They wanted to limit the power of the federal government so people could be free, because they recognized that liberty and limited government were synonymous, and that tyranny and total government were synonymous, and every time you passed a federal law, you took away a little freedom. So you pick up the story there, David.
Yes, we've been looking at Article 1 of the Constitution, particularly spent some time last month looking at Section 8. It's important to remember that the whole purpose of the Constitution is to state the limited, enumerated, delegated powers of the federal government. That is, this document says what the federal government can do. It also implies and states what it cannot do. In other words, only the powers granted to it in this document by we the people are permitted for the federal government to engage themselves in. And as we look at this list of specifically in Article 1, Section 8, the powers of Congress, it lists 18 things, 18 specific things that the federal government can do. Anything not on that list of 18 is forbidden to the federal government, and we know that from both Amendment 9 in the Bill of Rights and Amendment 10 that says that anything not delegated to the federal government is reserved either to the states, that is, the states have powers granted that the federal government doesn't have, or, if not to the states, to the individual citizens. They have powers and rights and abilities that neither the federal government nor the state government possess. We need to understand that it's a restrictive document, limiting the power of the federal government.
And I think that's the most important thing, that up until 50 years ago, everybody knew that the power of the central government was to be limited by the chains of the Constitution. But you see, there are fascists in our society, people who have a different vision of government, who believe that they and the elite need to guard it, to control us common people. What we're seeing is a return to a feudalistic system, because the average American really doesn't understand the Constitution of the United States. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Pastor David Whitney from the Institute of the Constitution, and we are talking about the American Constitution, and basically, of course, the Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution, which stipulates what the federal government can do. And anything that is not listed among those 18 things in Section 8 of Article 1 that the federal government can do, they do not have the authority to do, and we have people in Washington, D.C., who are betraying their oath of office and expanding the power of government and take away our freedom. So with that as a background, David, pick this story up.
Well, last month we talked about the first several of those clauses of Section 8 that Congress has power to tax and spend, but only for three limited purposes: the payment of debts, for common defense, and for general welfare. General being everybody must benefit. You cannot tax and spend for the specific welfare of any group, socioeconomic or regional group. All that is forbidden by Article 1, Section 8. Then the number two on the list of 18 is the power to borrow money. Number three, the power to regulate commerce with foreign nations, with Indian tribes, which are also considered foreign nations, and among the several states, that's interstate commerce. But never were they granted the power to regulate intrastate commerce. That's within a state. And we discussed how that barrier that was erected here in the Constitution was destroyed by the Supreme Court. Of course, the Supreme Court could only get away with destroying that barrier if the Congress and the Senate, as well as the President and his whole departments, went along with the scheme. The three branches are to check one another. If the Supreme Court does something unconstitutional, the other two branches are supposed to serve as a check upon it and prevent it from getting away with it. They have not. And as a result, the Commerce Clause is most often used to abuse we the people and take rights from us that the federal government has no legitimate or legal power to do. Number four on the list was make rules for naturalization and bankruptcy. We talked briefly about that. Fifthly, to coin money to regulate its value, fix weights and measures. And then six was to punish counterfeiting. And we noted at that point that there are only three federal police powers granted to the federal government. Only three. This is one of them, punish counterfeiting. Another one is just number 10, a little further on down the list there, to define and punish piracy and felonies on the high seas and violation of the laws of nature. And this is important. The framers understood the law of the concept, the law of nations. That is, it's not just that we, the people of these United States, are following the supreme law of the universe, God's law, which in the Declaration is called the laws of nature and nature's God. And we've spoken before how that, those two phrases refer to human conscience.
Hold that thought right there, David. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this afternoon is Pastor David Whitney, and he's simply talking about these ideas of nature's God and nature's law, which were foundational to our Declaration of Independence, which is really like the Articles of Incorporation of our country, and of this, these ideas, these Lockean ideas that came from the writings of John Locke, who is approaching the world from a Christian overall perspective. These ideas were foundational to the concepts and the Christian worldview of the founding fathers of our country. So certainly pick up the story there. These ideas that there were God-given rights, and of course government didn't give those rights. They were given by God. How different it is today when government tells us what we can do with our property, what we can't do with our property. Government wants to regulate every aspect of human endeavor and wants, of course, to send our bows overseas to fight and die in wars that we're not quite sure exactly why we're fighting them. Well, we're told, but let's not get onto that. Let's get back to what the Constitution says about the power of the central government.
Right. So when they talked about violations of the laws of nations, they were referring to a supreme law, the laws of nature and nature's God, human conscience and human reason, God having written his law. Romans 2 tells us God wrote his law on the heart of every human being. So when a person is born, they know God's law, you could almost say instinctively, but rather it's God's handwriting on their conscience. The second phrase in the Declaration, the law of nature's God, refers directly to the Bible. The revealed law of God by which we discover in printed text exactly what is right and what is wrong. And those two things not only governed our nation, the United States of America, but it governed every nation. That way they could refer to, there's an absolute standard. Every nation is supposed to submit to this standard of the laws of nature and nature's God. when a nation does not submit to God's standard, that nation, or a rogue group of pirates who are maybe not part of any nation really, they're just functioning on their own like modern day terrorists or whatever, that they can be punished according to a standard even if they're not part of a country that accepts the standard. This is the same principle that was employed in the Nuremberg trials. There, the Nazi officials were charged with war crimes. Based on what standard? Because all the Nazi officials said again and again and again, wait a minute, we were just obeying orders. We were just following the law of our land, Germany. These were legally passed pieces of legislation that said that this could happen, that these Jews could be quarantined and killed and so on and so forth. And he said, we're just doing what was lawful, what was legal. And it was said, no. There is a higher law, the laws of nations, that governs every nation. And no nation, not Nazi Germany, not the United States of America, no nation in the world can violate the laws of nature and nature's God and get away with it. And they should be punished. And so they were saying there's a standard even outside of these United States. And we can apply that standard on the high seas and punish felony and punish piracy when it takes place there on the high seas. So that's the second police power the federal government was granted. And it was granted that police power for a very specific reason. The individual states would have a difficult time having a consistent set of laws governing what happens on the high seas. Obviously, this is a function better put into the hands of the federal government rather than each individual state having its own set of laws that might contradict another state and you know, just be kind of chaos out there on the high seas. So it would make sense that this would be a power granted to the centralized government and not to the individual state government. We'll jump ahead here for a minute just to talk about the third power for and the only other police power granted to the central government was the power to punish treason. That is, someone who specifically sought to destroy these United States. Those are the only three powers: punish counterfeiting, punish piracy, felonies on the high seas, and punish treason. Any other police function was not the jurisdiction of the federal government. And boy, that's a principle most people today do not understand, including most county sheriffs and most state police forces. They don't understand that. They let the FBI and the, whoever else, now Homeland Security, do whatever they want in the boundaries of their jurisdiction because they say, well, we have to. I mean, of course, the federal government has, in most people's mind, most Americans' minds, the federal government has the ultimate police power. So whatever the FBI or whatever the, you know, the Homeland Security or all, I mean, there's a long laundry list now of abbreviations of federal agencies that have police power, whether it's OSHA or EPA or the Bureau of Alcohol, Firearms, Tobacco, and now explosives, I think, are in that list. There's just a whole laundry list of different federal agencies that are acting as policemen, and they have no jurisdiction to function as policemen in any way, shape, or form except these three areas: punish counterfeiting, punish piracy and felonies on the high seas, and punish treason. And yet, most of what they do, therefore, is unconstitutional.
Yeah, but, of course, yeah. David, the problem with this is that if we challenge them, they will target anybody in America who stands up and points out that the people in the federal government are violating the Constitution. That's what they did with Congressman Don Hansen, who actually was extremely outspoken about what was going on. And they targeted him with laws that did not apply, and they sent him to prison and tortured him here in the United States for 10 years. And George Hansen, you know, they broke his will, they bankrupted him, and after 10 years they said, oh, sorry, George, those laws didn't apply. Well, too bad, yes, you can go free now. You see, what they've done is intimidated the members of Congress who are far more fearful of the government coming after them. And I don't think there's anything that'll frighten the average American more than a letter from the IRS telling them they're going to be audited. This is really what we're up against today, is this excessive government power that makes people fear the government. And when the government fears the people, there's liberty. But when the people fear the government, we're well on our road to tyranny.
And that's the condition we're in today. As you mentioned, the IRS, that's the most fearful agency of the federal government. Most people tremble. to think that the IRS might possibly investigate them or come after them because they know it does not follow the rule of law that you're innocent until proven guilty. And again, this is what the design of our founders was so wise. They recognized that we only better give very, very limited police powers to the federal government because it is so distant from the people that it really doesn't have that much control that the people can have over the police functions. The highest police officer or police enforcement agency in the country was designed to be, according to English common law, this is the way it was there, was the county sheriff. And the county sheriff had police powers that even to this day, if he knows his function, he has police powers to prevent the FBI from doing unconstitutional things and the IRS from doing unconstitutional things in his jurisdiction if he's willing to stand up and fight, which, as you have mentioned before, he may not be willing to do because he knows that those who want to destroy this system will pour tons of money into the campaign of a sheriff who would run against him and seek to oust him from that seat of rightful authority. But for people to understand this design, we'll begin to understand that what's going on the federal level today is blatant violations, wholesale violations of the very design of our Constitution. These people are breaking the law. Instead of lawmakers, they're legislators, we have lawbreakers. Instead of judges, we have tyrants in black robes. Instead of an executive branch, we've got a law-breaking branch. So it's mind-boggling as you begin to study the details of the Constitution and recognize how they have destroyed the very structure that was designed to contain them and to prevent them from aggregating power to themselves. And the only way back, of course, is for we the people to understand these provisions and then begin to demand of our elected officials that they refuse unconstitutional legislation, that they turn back and undo pieces of legislation that have gone on for years that have violated the rule of law in our land, and we can begin to take it back. It's going to be a long road, and that's what oftentimes I think patriots may be a little bit too impatient to say, hey, we want to see it instantly. It took us 150 years, perhaps, to get to this point in time of undoing the Constitution. It's going to take us some time to get back, but as we educate people, that lays the groundwork for bringing a restoration, and that's what we're after, a restoration of the godly constitutional republic designed by our founders.
And the Constitution is still the law of the land. Mm-hmm. Contrary to what everybody will tell you, it's a living Constitution, it changes. No, the only way to change the Constitution is by the process of amendment, and the lawless people in Washington, D.C., who keep telling us, oh, it just changes all the time. No, it is being changed by people who have a different agenda, a different vision of America. Mm-hmm. And that is where everybody is subjected before the feet of the ruling elite. And this is really what it's about. It's about time we took America back, because if we don't take it back now, when will we take it back? And if we're not involved, who's going to be? Mm-hmm. If you're out there, you need to get in touch with the Institute of the Constitution. You need to find out about the foundations of our freedom. And if you believe in America, don't send your boys to fight and die on the bleached sands of Iraq. Get involved locally. Our battle is not with weapons, it's with ideas. And they fear that far more than they do in our militia in America. They fear the American people are going to find out what's been going on and are going to do something about it. Through the legal means, they fear ideas far more than they do force.
Well, you know, you mentioned the living, breathing Constitution farce that is pushed. It's interesting that one of the Supreme Court justices clearly identified the problem. Justice Scalia recently spoke to the Federalist Society, and he said that anybody that believes in the living Constitution is an idiot. And he very clearly said it does not change. It was never designed to change. It was designed to be a permanent fixed standard, and thank God at least one Supreme Court justice understands that. I'm not sure, perhaps Thomas as well, but I don't think any of the others really hold to that view of the Constitution, and that's part of our problem. We've got to replace these who have violated their oath of office by violating the very structure that our founders established in this beautiful Constitution that they enacted in our country.
And of course, the Constitution was once the envy of everyone in the world. Everybody wanted to come to America, because here you could be free. You could be free of government regulation and control and excessive taxation. and they weren't sending our boys overseas to fight in senseless wars. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest, Pastor David Whitney. David, pick up the story.
Well, we mentioned the three police powers granted to the federal government, only those three: counterfeiting, to punish piracy on the high seas, and punish treason. Well, moving to number 7 on the list of 18 powers granted to the federal government is to establish post offices and post roads. In other words, they recognize the difficulty if each state, and there were 13 states at that point in time, if each state had its own postal system. So internally, your mail would, you know, make it from one end of the state to the other. But if you wanted to get a piece of mail to another state, that might be very difficult if the postal system was not integrated across the states. And so they thought it would be wisest to give that power to the federal government, because then it could create a consistent system of post offices and post roads. Now notice it says establish post offices and post roads. And the debate here, it's a good one to wrestle with, is does it give the federal government anything more than just the ability to start the process, to establish it and to leave it alone? Of course, the Constitution has been interpreted ever since its, just about ever since its writing, to say that not only do they have the power to establish post offices and post roads, but then to go ahead and manage them and maintain them and fund them. We know that the post office is always a money-losing business up until recently, and so on. And so, but it doesn't, I think it is a twisting of the words of the Constitution to say that there's anything more that the federal government is granted other than to start the process and get it going, to establish a structure, establish post roads, and establish post offices, and then no longer have direct oversight over them. But that's an area for perhaps some solid constitutionalists to have a bit of disagreement and debate about. Number 8 in the list of 18, these are the 18 powers granted to the federal government, granted specifically to Congress. Number 8 in the list is to establish rules for copyrights and patents. That is, they recognize that your right to own property, by the way, your right to own property, where does it come from? It comes from God's law. When the commandment of God says, thou shalt not steal, that commandment in the positive sense says that you have a right to own property. And they recognize that not only was property a tangible thing, a piece of land or a piece of machinery or what have you, but there was intellectual property. That is, something that in your work and your imagination you created something, perhaps a machine you invented or a book you wrote, that your intellectual property needed to be protected just as much as your physical tangible property, the acreage of farm that you had or what have you. And so they also recognized that there would be a problem if the standards for copywriting and patenting were left to each state to determine. So there'd be 13 different standards for copyright, 13 different standards for patenting, and so on. And so they recognize this, again, would be a wise decision to give this power to the federal government, the central government, rather than to leave it in the hands of the 13 states, such that if you invented a machine or you wrote a book, you would only have to go to one patent office or one copyright office to have it copyrighted or patented. The federal, that would cover all the states, 13 states and whatever other states in the future join in these United States. So I think that was a wise decision on their part to establish rules for copyright and patents. Number 9 in the list is to establish federal courts below the Supreme Court. In other words, the only constitutionally warranted court that must exist on the federal level, the only court that must exist is the Supreme Court.
Hold that thought right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Pastor David Whitney, and he's simply talking about how the courts are established in the United States, and certainly the Supreme Court is mandated by the Constitution, but the Congress establishes all the lower courts, and of course can dissolve those courts at any time as it wishes. And, of course, later on we'll find out that the federal government can even limit the appellate jurisdiction of the Supreme Court so that the Congress itself was to be the supreme, the most important branch of government, not the courts themselves. Congress can dissolve every federal court in the United States tomorrow if it had the courage to. Pick up the story there, David.
And that's important to remember, that not only does the Congress establish all those lower federal courts and control all those lower federal courts. It can rearrange the districts. Right now there's 11 what they call the circuit court districts of those federal courts, which is below the Supreme Court. It could reshape them. It could change the salaries of particular judges that they wanted to punish for being out of line, not doing the business that they ought to be doing, not abiding by the Constitution. Of course, they could impeach them if they're not abiding by the Constitution. No, what we see here is that Congress has tremendous power over the judiciary because all of those lower courts are in the hands of Congress. So when we hear Congress wringing its hands, it's almost comical, Dr. Stan, you know, when, say, the Ninth Circuit out there in California declared, oh, you can't say the Pledge of Allegiance anymore because it has under God in it. We cannot do that. And you have the congressmen wringing their hands back in Washington. Oh, what can we do? Let's see if we can pass a piece of legislation that says, you know, that these people are wrong. And, you know, it's almost comical. They could have far more direct action and punish these people or remove them from office as judges or completely abolish their district or reduce their salaries or reduce any of the funding. They could punish these people in a wide variety of ways. Do they ever do it? No. They bow down like most Americans and worship any lawyer who happens to be wearing a black robe. It's as if a person is a lawyer, and most Americans despise lawyers. I know I have some friends that are lawyers, and they're good people and committed to the right things, but a lot of lawyers are not. Most Americans know that, and so they despise lawyers, but just put a black robe on a lawyer, and then we all bow down and say, whatever that lawyer says in a black robe must be right, it must be law. Our founder said no such thing. They wanted the judiciary to be the weakest of the three branches of government, and so they gave Congress enormous powers here over the judiciary. And yet either the congressmen today are ignorant of the Constitution, in which case, by the way, if they're ignorant of the Constitution, the things I'm saying here they are ignorant of, they are immediately disqualified for their job. They should resign. Or they should come take an institute on the Constitution and get a good education. I've offered that to several of the staffers of different congressmen I've run into. Hey, I'd be glad to teach your congressman and yourself personal lessons on what the Constitution says according to original intent. So far, none of them have taken me up on that offer, but nonetheless, they're either ignorant of the Constitution, and I suspect that not all of them are ignorant, Dr. Stan. I think some of them know these provisions of the Constitution, but they do not follow the Constitution. Why? Because they know they can get away with it. In a sense, there's a collusion going on between the legislative branch and the judicial branch to violate the terms of the Constitution with impunity. And they're doing it because they know most Americans don't know the Constitution. Therefore, most Americans are not going to blow the whistle on them and say, wait a minute, you cannot do this. You're breaking the very structure of our government. You're violating our contract with you, the Constitution of the United States.
And, of course, we do have one congressman. His name is Ron Paul. Yeah. And Ron Paul is a constitutionalist. And he's known in Congress as Dr. No, because you have 434 votes one way, and his is on the other side. No, because it's unconstitutional. But he always stands on the Constitution, so he doesn't have to puzzle in his own mind. Is this a good thing? Is it a bad thing? Will it help some people? Will it be beneficial? Is it constitutional? And that should be the decision of every one of the congressmen. Oh, so often, well, but wouldn't it be nice to help this grouper? Wouldn't it be nice to provide funds for that grouper? Wouldn't it be nice to build a bridge up there in Alaska to nowhere to spend, I think, $250 million on a bridge that goes to an island with 60 people on it? And that's, of course, the bridge is being built because, of course, one of the senator's daughters has some property up there, and or his son-in-law has property right adjacent to where the bridge to nowhere will be. Somebody once said it'd be cheaper to buy a Learjet for everybody on the island than to build the bridge. But people all across America, congressmen, voted for that money because they were going to get things in return. They're violating their responsibility to the American people. And what we need are people in Congress who have the courage to stand on the Constitution. I believe that this is a unique document. I believe that there has never been a document throughout all history that offered more freedom and more opportunity for more people. Isn't it a shame that we've forgotten it? Isn't it a shame that the people in our schools today are not taught the Constitution and that so few people really understand what it's all about? Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Go ahead, David.
So when we talk about, and rightly so, we talk about judicial tyranny in our land today, and many books have been written on this, and many conservative pundits have rightly said, we're under a tyranny of black-robe lawyers, and this is not the design of our founders. We demand a redress for our grievances here. Well, who are they going to demand the redress of grievances? To the Supreme Court or to the federal courts? You'll be laughed out. It's not slapped with a fine for contempt. But it's the Congress that we should really be hounding to say, you have failed in your duty to rein in an out-of-control judiciary. It is in your power to do so. It is your duty to do so, to crack the knuckles of these judges who are destroying the Constitutional Republic. It is your duty to do so, and if you do not do so, we need to replace you. Because if you will not do your duty, and you will not protect we, the people, against these black-robed tyrants, we're going to put somebody in Washington who will protect us against these black-robed tyrants. Do your duty, or we'll remove you. And that's the message Americans need to send very strongly, very firmly, and very pointedly to their elected representatives in Congress and the Senate, because it is their duty to do so, to establish the federal courts and control the federal courts, regulate the federal courts below the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court, we'll see, is when we look at Article 3, they also have a tremendous power over the Supreme Court, which, again, they are failing, by and large, to use in the right way. Well, that's number 9, and we go to number 10. We already discussed number 10, define and punish piracy and felonies on the high seas. So let's move right along to number 11. Actually, when we look at number 11, it forms a block. Numbers 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, and 16 in Article 1, Section 8 all deal with the provisions for going to war. These are very important to understand because Congress has a unique role in our three branches of government. Congress has unique powers related to conducting a war, and powers that, as we could discuss very clearly here today with what's taking place right now in the war in Iraq, Congress has failed again to do their duty, the first of which, number 11, is to declare war. It is Congress's duty always to declare a war, not the president's, not some Supreme Court justice. It's always Congress's duty to declare war.
Or it's certainly not the business of the United Nations to involve America in a war, or America to go to the United Nations to get permission to go to war.
That's right. So when the president came and asked for powers to go to war from the Congress, he did not ask them for a declaration of war, which meant he was violating the Constitution by even making this request. They were violating the Constitution by granting that request.
Hold that thought right there. Well, our guest today is Pastor David Whitney, and he's simply talking about what the Article 8 section, pardon me, Article 1 section 8 of the Constitution says about war, and there are a number of the provisions there in the 18 having to do with going to war. And only the Congress can declare war. Only Congress can provide the money for what's going on. And we should never be in a war without a declared war. And we're in a war today that is not declared. In fact, it was more or less in some way authorized by the United Nations. It seems we have to get their permission to go to war if we want to today. And that, of course, as you're seeing now, as we're beginning to talk about taking Iran to the United Nations so we can justify attacking this sovereign nation, because they're trying to develop nuclear weapons just like we have, and France has, and China has, and Pakistan has. But, of course, they can't have them because that might destabilize the world. Well, before we go on, David, I'd like you to tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you and the Institute of the Constitution and get your great information.
We offer a host kit for purchase, Dr. Stan, which enables anyone, anywhere, with really any group of people to teach the principles we're talking about here on this show, and we have for months. It's called our host kit because you really aren't teaching the Constitution. You're putting in a set of videos by Dr. Eidsmo, actually DVDs now, that in 12 half-hour lectures, he walks through the Christian history, heritage of our land. He gives a working knowledge of the founding documents, the Declaration, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, explains what has happened since the founding era in which the Constitution has been eroded, undermined, and destroyed in many respects. And as he talks in this course, he is building an understanding in the American citizen's mind of what the founders' vision, what their original intent was, so that the citizen can fulfill their role. You see, what we forget often is the Constitution's not a self-enforcing document. There's no Constitution police that goes out there and says, hey, Supreme Court Justice Rehnquist or whoever, you violated the Constitution. We're going to fine you this much and we're going to put you in prison. No. Or Congressman Ted Kennedy, we're going to put you in prison for violating the Constitution. Or President Bush, we're going to... No. Their only enforcement agency to enforce the terms of the Constitution is we, the people, citizens. So citizens must understand the founding documents in order to fulfill their function. And that's what this course does. It provides a turnkey method for anyone. You don't have to have any history background or any legal background. Probably you're better off if you don't have any legal background, because then you have to unlearn the lies you've been taught in law school in order to understand what it is our founders said. We encourage people to purchase this host kit and set up a class in their churches. Every church that believes the Bible should be training Christian citizens who know what their duty is as a Christian citizen, and this course accomplishes that. People can set them up in their local community center or their library or 100 different places where they can gather people from the community, train them in the founder's understanding and the original intent. They can call us toll-free to order a host kit by calling 866-730-9796. Let me give that toll-free number again. It's 866-730-9796. Or they can actually order a host kit as well as a number of other materials we have in our website store. And our website address is iotconline.com. That's in Institute on the Constitution, but abbreviated to make it shorter to type in. It's iotconline.com. We're encouraged as we see Americans across this great nation who are raising up a group of citizens who understand these principles and are ready to say, what can I do next? Which is either very carefully select who you're going to vote for, communicate clearly with your elected representatives about what they are standing for and what they're not standing for, and perhaps if you discover in looking at the potential candidates you can't find a good one to vote for because none of them are constitutionists, maybe you could consider running for office yourself. And we're encouraged. I've conducted a class here in Pasadena on Wednesday nights, and we have three people running for office in this current class, three people running for state positions of Senate and the House of Representatives. So that's encouraging. That's the kind of thing we want to see. We want to train up people who are going to take their place in the leadership of our state and the leadership of our country.
Okay, fine. I should mention that the Institute does help Radio Liberty to bring these programs to you, and we certainly support everything they're doing. If we don't, as a nation, understand the foundations of our freedom, how can we possibly hope to preserve them? So pick the story up there, David.
So as I mentioned earlier, number 11 is to declare war. Only Congress can declare war. You know the last time they did it, Dr. Stan? World War II.
Right.
Yeah. All the wars since World War II have been unconstitutional actions, every single one of them.
And, of course, we fought a no-win war. In Korea, we fought a no-win war. And certainly in Vietnam, we did win the first Gulf War. We had 695,000 troops deployed.
Mm.
Isn't it interesting? We only have about 160,000 now, and not simply to chase Saddam Hussein out of Kuwait, but now to occupy Iraq to fight a guerrilla war. Why did it take so many troops just to chase Saddam Hussein out of Kuwait back in 1991, and so few troops to do what we're supposed to do today? And time and again, when they've asked for more troops, they've been told they couldn't have them, and they don't have enough armor for our people, and they don't have the armored vehicles. And the general who was assigned to train an Iraqi army, and he was actually given six men to train an army for a nation of 25 million people. Do you really think we're trying to train the Iraqi army to take over from the American people? Or do you think they're going to leave the American boys there in the meat grinder? If you'd like to verify what I just said, the general has written a book, and initially he was only given six men to train an army for a nation of 25 million people of Iraq. Later on, they did give him about 150, but they would keep rotating the men and out, so there was no stability. So he couldn't train the army. Why didn't we want to train an army? Why did we want to keep sending American boys there to do the job that Iraqi should have been doing to restore law and order? And I think we have to ask ourselves, are things as they really appear to be? Or maybe, just maybe, there is another agenda behind the war in Iraq. But you pick up the story, because we want to stick with the Constitution.
Yes. Well, number 12 on the list of 18 is to raise and support armies. Armies is a generic term for all non-naval forces, so that could be understood to include an air force and so on. And it's very important that raise and support armies, and this was with a two-year limitation. That is, funding for an army would have to be renewed after 2 years. This was not power granted to the executive branch, but power granted specifically to Congress, because they knew Congress was the branch of government most answerable to the people. And if the people did not want to engage in the war that was being fought, their congressmen would hear loud and clear within 2 years, when election time rolled around again, they would know whether the people stood behind this particular war or not. And so the raise and support, the idea was never to have a standing army. Our founders knew the danger of a standing army. They saw that with Britain. Britain had a standing army that would roam around the world, picking fights wherever it went. And they certainly saw the dangers of a standing army. They did not want a standing army. Instead, they wanted state militias that when a war was called, declared, that is, America was attacked in some way, and there was a justifiable response, so forth, that then they could call upon the state militias and federalize them, bring them under the control of federal generals to conduct the war. But it would not be a permanent war force, a permanent army. It would be a temporary army that's raised to address an immediate pressing need, not a standing army. Well, number 13 relates to this. It says to provide and maintain a navy. And the wording here is different. Raise and support armies, 12, 13, is provide and maintain a navy. The difference is that you can't raise a navy quickly, build ships and organize sailors and so on. You have to have an ongoing naval force to be ready for action. So while the standing army was never their design, a standing navy was, because they recognized that you couldn't raise a navy quickly in time of war and time of desperate need. And so that was the design there. The navy would have a more permanent force in play. Number 14, that they would establish rules of discipline for military forces, what's known today as the Uniform Code of Military Justice. In other words, it's not the president, not the executive branch, that determines the rules for the military. It is the Congress that determines this. And we saw this ridiculous stuff back in Clinton's reign, you know, when he, I should say his regime, when Clinton said, oh, you know, the policy for the military is don't ask, don't tell. Well, wait a minute. The president doesn't get to make that decision. That's not his jurisdiction. That is the Congress that establishes the rules of discipline for the military forces. And to allow Clinton to get away with that was an abdication of their responsibilities as congressmen. Now, 15 also relates to the military. It's to provide for calling militia into federal service. And again, we emphasize that the militias were in the control of the state. Actually, the governor of the state basically is the chief of the militia for his state. And it's only when a war is declared that that militia is called into federal service. And there's only three purposes for which a militia can be called into federal service. In other words, the restrictions on calling up the state militias to federal service are these. They must be to execute federal laws, to suppress insurrections, and to repel invasions. That is, if there's an insurrection taking place within one of the states, then the militias can be called into federal service to suppress an insurrection. If there's an invasion, suppose we got an invasion across our southern border. I think we do, don't we, Dr. Fan? We have a massive invasion on our southern border. Are we doing anything to repel that invasion? Nothing. And certainly we haven't called up the militias to deal with that invasion across our southern border. And thirdly, to execute federal laws. The ridiculous thing we saw in New Orleans here with Katrina was there was a complete violation of every aspect of what a militia is called into federal service to do. They were not executing federal laws. They were executing bureaucracy of FEMA and other ridiculous things. This is not the job of the military. We see today, I just saw a news brief on our troops have landed in the Philippines to help in the mudslide. It's like, what? Is that executing federal laws? Is that suppressing an erection? Is that insurrection? Is that repelling an invasion? No, that's completely unconstitutional for our troops to be over there in the Philippines helping out in a mudslide. Now, you might find that there's other groups that should be doing that. Maybe churches could send groups of people to help in the Philippines, but that is not the job of our military. It is not the job of a state militia that's called into federal service.
I think it's really so interesting. We can send our troops to the Philippines for the mudslide. We can send our troops to, the Southeast Asia for the tsunami, but we can't guard our borders. We have to ask, maybe they don't want to guard our borders.
Yes.
Maybe our leaders have a different agenda, and that's the destruction of American sovereignty, and, of course, merging us with Mexico. That would be a much more logical thing to have our troops at home rather than going to the Philippines, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would, because that's their duty. If we were truly following the Constitution, and again, here, you know, we can blame the president. I mean, he is culpable. He is violating the Constitution. But the Congress is the one that's supposed to be holding his feet to the fire and stepping on his toes and say, you cannot do this with the military. You cannot send them to the Philippines. You cannot do X, Y, and Z. You must follow the Constitution. And what people don't understand, and this is perhaps why people aren't motivated to study the Constitution, is this is the supreme law of the land, as we'll see when we look at Article 4, Section 4. It is the law. And anybody that breaks this law is a lawbreaker. Whether you call him president, whether you call him congressman or senator, he is breaking the law of the land and must be held to account. But it's we the people that have to enforce this Constitution, we the people that have to call our elected officials on the carpet and demand that they do their duty, first of which, of course, is to know the Constitution well enough, like Ron Paul, to be able to say, this is what's constitutional, this is what's unconstitutional, and then act upon that knowledge. Well, the 16th provision also relates to the Army. So provisions 11 through 16 are all war provisions. The 16th statement is to organize, arm, and discipline the militia. Again, the militias are under the control of the states. It's only when they're called into federal service that Congress controls the militia while it's in federal service. Now, the states reserve the right to appoint militia officers subject to the discipline of Congress. So this is where there's some crossover, where the state appoints the officers over its state militia, and yet the discipline over those officers that are state-appointed is nonetheless subject to Congress. So again, Congress has some control over what's happening in the state militias so that those state militias are prepared when the emergency, when the crisis arises to execute federal laws, to suppress insurrections, and to repel invasions. Now, the problem we get into here is what we saw in Katrina, and I think that my opinion is that Katrina is just a test case of what is to come far more frequently than any of us can even expect, but that this provision that the militia called into federal service to execute federal laws, but what if the federal laws that they're called to execute are unconstitutional laws? Now you put the military man in a conflict. He's called to execute a federal law. If he doesn't know the Constitution, if the officers in the militia don't know the Constitution, then they're going to accept whatever order is handed down from them from the higher up in the military structure and say, okay, this is what we got to do. We got to go march into New Orleans and take all the guns from every citizen in New Orleans in direct violation of the Second Amendment. Like, what jurisdiction, what power, where's that in the Constitution that the Army goes collecting people's firearms, violating their Second Amendment rights?
And, you know, David, I really think what we saw in Katrina was just a sort of experiment to see how much authority and how much violation of the Constitution would be allowed by the good people of New Orleans. They knew they were violating the Constitution when they went door-to-door collecting weapons and leaving the people defenseless, because there were some marauding gangs down there, marauding looters. So why would they disarm the people? You would think they'd want to disarm the looters. They didn't seem to be so interested in that. It was just disarming the law-abiding citizens. And so much of what happened in New Orleans doesn't make sense unless, of course, it was simply a trial run.
And I'm so encouraged in our current class here in Pasadena, because we have two folks who are in the military who are currently serving in the military, and they're very interested in finding out this information because they recognize, as we're conducting this course, that they have a sworn duty. Did they take an oath to do whatever President Bush tells them to do? No. They take an oath to do whatever their commanding officer tells them to do? No. They took an oath to defend the Constitution and enact constitutional laws. And so a military man must know what laws are constitutional, what laws are not constitutional.
And you know, it's the most amazing thing. Everybody who runs for political or state office has to swear to uphold our Constitution and defend it against all enemies, foreign or domestic. Who are the domestic enemies of the Constitution? Why, they're the people who are violating the Constitution, and they're at every level of government today. And if you don't know what the Constitution says, you don't know who the lawbreakers are. You don't know who to obey. David, we're out of time. God bless you for everything you do.
Thank you so much, Doctor.
One more time, your telephone number.
Yes, our toll-free number is 866-730-9796.
Thank you so very much. God bless.
Bye-bye.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and I do hope that many of you have enjoyed our conversation with David Whitney, because, of course, he's really a great source of information. We go through the Constitution every several months, and we do it over and over again, hoping that you will begin to understand the various sections, the various parts of the Constitution. The Article 1 deals with the Congress. Article 2 deals with the executive. Article 3 deals with the judiciary. And then, of course, there's 7 articles altogether. There are about 23 or 27th amendments, something like that at the present time. But you need to understand how our Constitution is construed, and then you need to understand the Bill of Rights. The Bill of Rights is a restriction on the power of the federal government. Never before in all history has there been a government that was set up with built-in restrictions. And yet, what does the First Amendment say? Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. Congress shall make no law. Didn't say the states, didn't say the local community. It was a restriction on the power of Congress. And you see, that was the way it was. That's why we could have prayer in school. That's why we could have the nativity scene in the local communities. The federal government was to have nothing to do with what was happening at the state level. But you see, the wicked people, and of course there were wicked people, who wanted to destroy the Christian heritage of America. And that's why President Roosevelt, who was the 32nd degree Mason, and Harry Truman, who was the 33rd degree Mason, packed the Supreme Court with Masons. So that between 1941 and 1971, Masons, members of a secret society that had sworn horrible blood oaths to another god, the great architect of the universe, Masons controlled the United States Supreme Court in majorities of 5-4 to 8-1. So it was during those years that took God out of our schools, and they made it illegal, of course, to have the nativity scene. And why won't any of our political leaders tell us that? Why? Because 5 of our last 12 presidents have sworn those same horrible bloody oaths, and the 6th was Bill Clinton, who was a high-ranking DMOLE, which is the Organization for Boys affiliated with Masonry. And another 6 of our last 12 presidents came from the Council on Foreign Relations that was founded in the occult and in Masonry. And all of these organizations are dedicated to the destruction of our national sovereignty, to the Novo Ordo Seclorum, you'll see inscribed on the back of the American dollar bill. So you need to understand our history. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when I need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we do hope that many of you will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family and helping us as we reach out 5 hours every single day. By radio, by internet, 4 hours on satellite, 4 hours on shortwave, 9 hours on satellite. But it's an expensive proposition to do what we do, and quite frankly, we do need your help. Now, if you'd like to know more about the background of our Constitution, well, we have a wonderful book. It's called Betrayed by the Prince. It's written by our good friend John Stormer. And it goes into the Declaration of Independence. It goes into the true meaning of our Constitution and this idea of limiting the power of government so men could be free. That's Betrayed by the Bench by John Stormer. And then we have, of course, The Supremacist by a book written by Phyllis Schlafly that goes into the background of the Supreme Court. We have a book on the Wall of Separation, an excellent book written by a lawyer, going to this mythical Wall of Separation which doesn't exist, and that it simply reflects the hatred of Christianity by people at the highest levels of our government. And then we have David Barton's book. If you haven't read it, it's a must. It's called Original Intent, that goes into the whole concept of our Constitution, the Christian foundation of the country, America's God and Country by William Federer. All of these and so many other books are available through Radio Liberty, and we have them so you'll understand. John Stormer's book, Betrayed by the Bench, Phyllis Schlafly's The Supremacist, David Barton's Original Intent, William Federer's America's God and Country. All of these books are vitally important for you to understand what's going on. And then, of course, the book entitled The Wall of Separation. They're all available by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. You need to understand our Constitution and our form of government if you hope to preserve it. Then, of course, we have a great new DVD. It's put out by David Bay from Cutting Edge, and it goes into the secret societies that are the foundation of America today and are driving us into a World War III. The DVD is entitled The Secret History of America's Beginning. The Secret History of America's Beginning, and we think it's a great DVD. I happen to be in it. Other William Stahl and others are there. And certainly Bill Snebel and many of the people you hear on my program. But of all the DVDs that's out there, this is the most dramatic, most beautifully done, and we recommend it to you very, very strongly. That's The Secret History of America's Beginning. It's almost 3 hours. And then, of course, there's my DVD or video, Planned Population Reduction. There is a plan to kill off most of the people in the world. There is a plan to kill off the majority of the population of the world today. And people look at that and think that couldn't be true. And yet, we've lost over 500,000 people from AIDS here in America. Totally unnecessary. Another 1 million people are infected, and they're going to die unnecessarily. We've lost almost 100 million people in the world from malaria unnecessarily since 1973, and they're lying about the number of people who die every year from malaria. And when you realize, of course, that our policies are killing people throughout the third world, well, we can't let the American people know. In Botswana today, 46% of the pregnant women who come in for testing for AIDS are infected. Is that a failed public health policy? Or a successful genocidal policy? Understand, we are aligned against organized evil at the highest levels, and it's working right in the Centers for Disease Control and in the World Health Organization. You need to have the information. Planned Population Reduction, I recommend to you. And then, of course, we ask you to call us at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927 if you'd like to get a free copy of one of our newsletters or a catalog. And, of course, our website, RadioLiberty.com. And then pray for America. Pray for revival. But please pray for my ministry, for our provision and protection. And so until tomorrow, may the Lord be with you.